exciting trends in education today is the move online. The reduced cost and enhanced flexibility of online education contribute to both buzz and appeal. At the same time, there is naturally concern about educational quality, and also concern in the MBA world in particular, if online MBA programs have the same clout with recruiters as traditional programs. Those are a couple of the topics we're going to explore today with our special guest, Beth Fly, Director of Admissions of the MBA at UNC Online MBA Program. But before we explore that topic, I want to welcome you, our listener, to eavesdrop on our conversation. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me on the show. As I always do, I also want to mention three housekeeping items, all of which you can handle at the end of the show. First, after you listen, please leave your feedback, be it good or bad, in the show notes in the form of an iTunes review or simply by hitting the plus sign on Stitcher if that's how you prefer to listen to this. And you can always email labraham@accepted.com and let me know individually what you think. I want to also mention that Accepted.com currently has its early bird special running. If you purchase any MBA, grad, or law Accepted.com service, you get 10% off between now and July 15th with coupon code EB10. We'll include a link in the show notes to our services, and you can get the details at info.accepted.com/22, which is where the show notes for this show is located. Again, that link is info.accepted.com/22. And finally, I want to invite you to subscribe, if you don't already, to Admission Straight Talk in iTunes or in Stitcher. Again, I'll include links in the show notes at info.accepted.com/22. That's just the number 22. Now, our special guest is Beth Fly, and I want to just give you a little bit of background. I first met Beth when she was admissions director at Kellogg and moderated an admissions consulting panel at the GMAC conference in 2006. At the time, my consultant colleagues and I felt as if we were walking into the lion's den by presenting at the GMAC conference. Beth's gracious and professional moderation set the tone both for that day's event as well as for the developing dialogue between consultants and school admissions representatives. To the extent that dialogue, occasionally contentious, is more frequently constructive, I believe it is a tribute, at least partially, to the role Beth played then and the example she set at that conference 7 years ago. More important to you, listener, and more germane to our topic, is that Beth has over 17 years of experience in the MBA admissions world, having served as director at Kellogg, director of admissions at Kellogg for 8 years, and before that at Darden and at UNC. Most recently, she has served for the last 2 years as admissions director at MBA at UNC, UNC's online MBA program. I could think of no one better to invite to discuss online MBA programs than Beth Fly. Beth, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Hi, Linda. Great to be back with you, and hello to the listeners. Good to be here.
Thank you. Beth, for those listeners who are not that familiar with MBA at UNC, can you give a brief overview of the program structure and time frame?
Happy to do so, Linda. So the MBA at UNC program is the most recent addition to the portfolio of MBA programs here at the Keenan Flagler Business School at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This program launched, when I say launch, meaning in the sense of having brought in our first cohort. We bring in four cohorts per year, but the inaugural cohort started the program in July of 2011. The program was long in formation, obviously, long before then. We announced in fall of 2010. And anyway, first of all, the purpose of the program was the school knew that there was a market and had been talking about going into the virtual space for a while. But anyway, after many conversations, talking with recruiters, et cetera, there was a lot of evidence to support the path, and the very pioneering path, I would add at that, for UNC to go into the virtual space and take the MBA that we offer, the great general management program that the school is known for, and take it to a market of people that we knew existed out there that for whatever reason, and reason could be family related, work related, one of two common reasons, but take the program to them because for, you know, a variety of factors, there are people who have wanted to pursue business education at the graduate level but have had some type of hindrance, or perhaps, you know, as it relates to either going full-fledged ahead with an immersive traditional two-year full-time program, or even some degree of a part-time program. Mm-hmm. So again, we sensed that there was a market for that, and let me just say in a nutshell, our all indicators were correct, and this program is for working professionals who are seeking career enhancement, and in some cases they are seeking to make a change in their careers. I will also be the first to quickly interject, it's not a program designed for radical career switchers, and I'm happy to expand upon that if you would like for me to do so as we progress in the conversation. But anyway, the program itself can be completed in as early as 18 months, but students must complete it within 3 years. So again, there's flexibility on the timing front. And then the other key word that goes along that really highlights the reason this program exists is accessibility. You can do this program from anywhere in the world.
Right.
And it incorporates, I think some people, when they've thought of any type of online education, some people may automatically think, okay, recorded, you know, I access something that I read or that I listen to versus a live interactive experience. And that's not the type of program that we are. The courses here, they are live classes. We do have what we call asynchronous content, which is our activities that students engage in through online materials outside of the live sessions. But you know, as we say, again, students are getting the same high-quality Keenan Flagler MBA education. It's just how it's being delivered is different.
Well, I mean, when you talk about asynchronous and synchronous, I mean, asynchronous would be analogous to reading textbooks in a traditional classroom, and synchronous would be sitting in the classroom.
Right, and you probably have heard this term, Linda, but and I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there have heard this, especially given the change and disruption in the grand world of higher education at large. But the experience is equivalent to what we call a flipped classroom. Mm-hmm. And rather than have a traditional lecture during the live classes, might there be some lecturing depending upon the professor and, of course, the nature of the course? The answer to that is yes. The mm-hmm. difference, though, is we want it to be very interactive and a very rich level of exchange, mm-hmm. such that, you know, readings or projects, again, rather than have a lot of that take up class time and valuable exchange, that is what the asynchronous content is designed to do. So that people come to class, you know, not just prepared, but frankly, I will say this, and our students have said this numerous times, that they have to be on at a level that I think is very different than being on in a brick and mortar program. Not to say that one surpasses the other, but as you probably know, just through your own work and mm-hmm. doing activities when you're on camera, when you're online, there's a different level of intensity and presence. And what I'm trying to say is, I think that's a very positive thing in terms of the valuable learning experience that these guys are getting in this program. And what our students say a lot is, they, you know, I think some students think that sometimes they may go into a grad course or a graduate program, whether it's an MBA program or any other, and that, hey, sometimes for whatever reason, I can coast in a class or hide for a little bit here and there.
Sure.
You can't do that in this program, and the mantra is you cannot hide. And the live classes, this is the beauty of the program. The live classes, there are no more than 15 students in mm-hmm. each of your live classes.
Right.
So again, you've got the best of both worlds as far as a growing, very, very high caliber student enrollment, and you know that's valuable in the networking and learning front for all of the students. But there's a very up close and personal, richly interactive experience in the live classes.
Great. It reminds me when I went to UCLA, obviously a very large public university, and I was a political science major, and there were many classes, even the quote-unquote smaller upper division classes, but frankly, it was straight lecture, and, you know, I took notes, and maybe there was questions at the end, but there was no terribly rich, there was not a terribly rich dialogue, to be put it mildly. And then I visited my sister, who went to a much smaller university, and when I visited her, she happened to be taking a political science class, and I attended with her, and it was a whole different experience, because those students, A, they had to be prepared, and they were definitely expected to participate. It was just a very, very different educational environment, and what you're talking about reminds me of that. What about, now, do graduates of MBA at UNC get an MBA from UNC Ken Flagler, just like graduates of the traditional two-year full-time program? Is there any asterisk after that name?
Absolutely. Their diploma, which I'm very happy to add, by the way, that we're going to be granting rather, we're going to have our first graduation in the weekend of July 13th, and so 18 of our students are going to be the first recipients of their diplomas. And so that diploma is the same as the one that a student from the full-time program would receive, as is also the case for our sister programs under the executive MBA program umbrella.
Okay, great. What are some of the differences in the admissions process between the traditional MBA applications cycle or evaluation process and that of MBA at UNC? Are you looking for different or additional qualities in the online MBA program?
Great question. And as you know, of all people, having been with the school before and also given your current profession, schools can be similar or programs can be similar in terms of what they are asking for for a candidate to submit in order to be reviewed for admission. And there can be some nuances. So there's there can be some high-level parallels, but then there can also be some very different things. I'll talk about this more high-level as it relates to Kenan Flagler in general. We're looking at very similar buckets of information as we do for our full-time program as well as for our weekend and evening executive MBA programs. We're looking at quality of work experience. We are looking at attributes in terms of confidence, maturity, what they will add to the experiences of their fellow classmates. We're looking at, of course, why they're interested. You know, what are their career aspirations? Why do they want to make this investment and go down this path and take the journey? Mm-hmm. I would say to that point, in terms of their reasons for an MBA and their career goals, getting back to a point that I stated earlier, we probably put the magnifying glass a bit on what they are sharing with us on that front. Again, because we want to make sure that, you know, to answer a very simple question, that on the career front, we can help them.
Right.
So there may be a case, in fact, there has been a very small number, fortunately, but a very small number of applicants in the past that may not have received admission with us only because we didn't think that this program was the best match for them. And frankly, that's the right decision to do.
Right.
You know? And again, we want to make them successful, and, you know, and also we want them to be happy here and leave thinking, I would make that choice to go to MBA at UNC 1,000 times again.
Right. I'm smiling here because I'm preparing to deliver two webinars, one today and one tomorrow, and my book is all about the importance of appropriate goals when you apply to business school.
Very good.
So
I'll be curious to see that.
Well, the book is out, but I mean that is what my particular approach to MBA admissions is all about. That's the foundation, in my opinion,
And as I will add, and I, again, I'm preaching to the choir with you, of course, but...
Yeah, but there are a few other people who are going to be hearing this.
Well, when I talk about career change or career changers, and in fact, I was having this discussion with someone this morning, when I think about a career change. I don't think that, okay, there's a, if you draw a straight line and then if you draw a line intersecting that straight line, meaning there is no black and white mandated boundary that, okay, you are either a career changer or you're not a career changer.
Career enhancer,
how
right.
I think about it is a continuum with, mm-hmm. let's just say, for example, on the far left end, that color is all white. That person really, it's purely about career enhancement versus the other end of the spectrum. It's completely black. That person wants to make a radical change in terms of function and industry.
Right.
And then there are the shades of gray, you know? And so the question, one of the filter questions that I ask in my own mind is again, what is the degree of the career, you know, if it looks like there's some their career change in their aspirations, how different is it? And sometimes mm-hmm. if those of us who are looking at applications are not sure, we'll also talk with, you know, I'll also talk with my colleague that heads up career management for MBA at UNC to get her perspective. And again, it comes back to that question, that very simple but important question of, can we help them? Does mm-hmm. this program make sense given their background and what they want to do?
Right. 100%. 100%. I think it's so important for applicants to understand that point. It also is important because if they try and it's so silly. Every so often I'll talk to applicants and they'll be saying, well, I really want to do X, but I feel that in order to get in, I have to say I want to do Y. And I'll say, well, if what you really want to do is X and the school doesn't feel it can help you do X, maybe it knows something that you need to consider.
Absolutely.
I mean, it makes no sense. And I've had these conversations many times over the years.
Of course. And members of the team here, we've had conversation with folks what I would call the exploration stages.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had phone calls and face-to-face conversations where sometimes I can tell, you want to do what is best for the prospective student at the end of the day. To me, mm-hmm. that is very core to what we as a school do, and frankly, that's core to how I operate.
Mm-hmm.
You want to ultimately help that person.
Right.
And there have been conversations or exchanges that I've had in the past where I've actually said, you know, I am delighted that you're interested in this program, but to be completely candid with you, I think you would be best served looking at our full-time program, and here is why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think ultimately people appreciate that because, as you may have heard me say in the past when I've had interviews with you like this, going to business school and not having a clue about why you're doing it, that's a very expensive way to find yourself. And that's something that I know you as well as all of us here, we want to make sure that we prevent that from happening if at all possible.
Right. For sure. For sure. Just to change directions a little bit on our conversation, I mean, I completely agree with everything that you're saying. And I think just before I go back to where I wanted to go, I want to point out that on some level, I've never met an MBA student who wanted to go back and do exactly what they were doing before they applied.
I agree.
You know, there's always some degree of change. But is it a realistic change, and is it a change that the program can help them achieve? And I think that's what you're really focusing on here.
Absolutely. And I will be very candid with you and say that from a decision-making point of view, meaning making a decision about one's application here, and frankly, again, this has been my philosophy along my professional path to date, I always build in lots of different filter questions in my mind when evaluating applications.
Mm-hmm.
And on the whole career focus or career goals front, one filter question that I'll drop into my thoughts would be, okay, if this person has articulated that they want to do X, and
mm-hmm.
you know, in that particular case, sounds like they've been very reflective and there's clarity about why they're interested in this direction and they're sharing how, you know, what they're laying out the path of how they foresee getting there. But I also ask the question quietly in my mind of, okay, they may discover or arrive at a different destination in terms of once they become a student of where they'd like to go. And so a question that I ask is, okay, if given their background, if this is somebody that we want to admit, if we couple their package with our program and they take advantage of every opportunity that we have here, might they have options? And note the word, I'm saying a plural word. And granted, we certainly don't proclaim to be a crystal ball program, meaning we can predict the outcome. But that is something that we're looking at because it's clear and also understand people do want to have options. And so we recognize that we don't, that's not something that we criticize in a negative way. Again, it comes back to, does it make, does this program make sense for them?
Okay, let's change direction on just a little bit here. What is the, I mean, what is the average GMAT score of accepted students to MBA at UNC?
Okay, what I am going to share on that front is the middle 80th percentile range. And the reason for that is we are still scaling. And that, again, that's the good news. Growing in terms of the applicant pool, scaling, obviously, in terms of enrollment growth. And by the way, make sure that I share with you, I always love to give the milestone of how many we brought in that very first cohort and where we are now. But what we've been trending at consistently for the past few months, the middle 80th percentile range is has been 560 to 720. And again, the other thing about the pool, I know that you were asking earlier about the admissions process. Is there anything different in terms of how we approach the criteria? One of the things that I will share that I think is, a great plus or a nice hallmark about MBA at UNC, obviously, as you know, the great business schools want to have not just a very accomplished and smart group of people that are coming in, but a really interesting group of people coming in. And I will say that this program, I have never seen the rich level of diversity. And diversity, as we know, there are a lot of different prongs of the definition behind
diversity is diverse.
But I'm just going to say not just general backgrounds, but just an incredible richness of the diversity in terms of professional experiences and a very rich mix of where people are on their career path. What I mean by that is we have, you know, there was a person that was recently just admitted earlier this week. This person is extremely junior in his career. He is a budding entrepreneur. And that, I mean, and he's already got a history behind him. And again, he is very junior. Go to the into the more experienced end of the professional experience spectrum. We've got physicians in this program who are incredibly accomplished, who have worked 15 plus years and want to go into healthcare management. And so, you know, that's a the span, I would say, in terms of diversity is wider than what you may see in a traditional full-time program. That's purely my opinion. But I think it is a great thing because, again, the exposure that the students are having with one another, I just think it's richer. In many ways, I think it's richer.
Now, you mentioned that the first, I guess, cohort is graduating in July. And you also mentioned that it actually started, the inaugural cohort began in July 2011. So I'm guessing that most of these people took 24 months to complete the program, and nobody took the option of, and nobody took the option of completing it in 18 months. Is that right?
Well, the answer is yes and no. So let me fill in the blanks for you a bit so you get a...
Or some started later and could have finished it,
So the first cohort that we brought in 19 students. And I will tell you that's probably the proudest group of students I have ever encountered in my career. And, you know, they were, and to their credit, they were pioneers in and of themselves. I mean, we were pioneering this program, and they were pioneers coming aboard with us. Out of that 19, 17 will graduate in a few weeks. The other two, again, remember, most of the students have been trending on average about a two-year, 24-month path for completion. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But there are a couple of students who they're going to graduate. I can't remember how much later. It's not very much later. I want to say both of those, I believe, will be finished by end of this calendar year.
Uh-huh.
But the one person, so number 18, is a person who has been on more of an accelerated path and has completed the program in less than 24 months.
I see. So it is possible.
Right, right. So again, for those who, again, I think it depends on what you're trying to accomplish, and if you, depending upon what your life balance is, will help shape how aggressive, you know, how, what the pace will be, so to speak.
Okay.
And again, that gets back to the flexibility benefit.
Right. I mean, that's the beauty of the program. If someone takes two courses per quarter, which enables completion in 24 months, how much time on average per week are they spending on their MBA studies?
Great question. And that's a common question that we get. How we respond to that is as follows. We give a response as a baseline, and that baseline mm-hmm. would be, we tell students, plan on for each class that you have, each live class that you have. So again, let's say a person is taking two classes in a given term, and so they're in class two times a week. We tell them, use as a baseline 10 hours of work per class per week. So again, 20 hours. Now, you and I both know that can vary. You know,
sure.
if you have someone coming in who is an engineer and, you know, quantitative skills are secondhand nature, when they're in yeah. our analytical tools core class, that person may not need to work as much.
Yeah, really.
Conversely, if it's someone of the
liberal arts
background, yeah. like you and I,
yeah.
going into analytical tools may require, again, more work. It's like learning a move in a sport, as I always think about it. We're looking yeah. for people who are natural athletes, but we're going to make them better, and you know, there are going to be certain course areas that will be more challenging. Yeah. Ultimately, the whole program is going to be challenging, but you see what I'm saying. How much time they're going to be spending may vary from student to student.
Okay. I know there is a required core, which is frankly similar to the required core at many, many MBA programs, and there's also the option of having a concentration in MBA at UNC. How many courses are required in terms of the core, and how many elective options do students have? And I'm going to guess that the elective options are at least somewhat less rich or less varied than in the full-time program, because it's a much smaller program.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
can you address that?
We're still evolving, absolutely.
Right.
So with the core classes, if I believe I'm correct on this, I believe there are nine distinct core courses. There is what I'm going to call a 10th bucket core, but it's this is not the name of the class, but actually, and the following is something I want to make sure to cover with you, because I think it will be of great interest to everyone who's listening.
Okay.
The 10th area that is a requirement is what is known as our global immersions.
Mm-hmm.
Students are required to do two of those, so that goes into that mix of the core.
Right. As I recall, those are residential programs. In other words, people have to physically go somewhere. No?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about that. This
okay.
is probably one of the most unique elements of the MBA at UNC program. So the global immersions, in a nutshell, they're offered four times a year or quarterly. That would
uh-huh.
be, we have a March immersion, then one in July, September, and December. They are offered domestically and internationally. We strategically pick destinations primarily based on what is a particular, each immersion has a theme, has a business theme, so that all activities that take place during that immersion focus on that theme. To give you an example, most recently, as of just in the past 2 weeks, the June immersion was in Chicago. 186 of our students descended on the Chicago immersion.
Wow.
The theme of that was values-based leadership. Back in March, we were in Singapore. We had nearly 60 students. The focus there, it's a very elegant title, and it's on our website, but it was held in Singapore because we were focused on the history of and the current significance of Asia, with Singapore being a very hub place, as you know, not just in Asia, but on the planet. And so everything was focused around the history and the evolution of the importance of Asia in the global economy. Last year, we had one in San Francisco. That one was focused on entrepreneurship and innovation and entrepreneurial thinking. So those are just some examples. September will be Istanbul. December will be Chapel Hill, which we right now are planning to have the December one here in Chapel Hill each year to give students that opportunity to, you know, to come to the parent land, as I like to say.
Right.
We will be in South Africa, in India, and New York next year. So we're already planning very far out.
Yeah.
These immersions, again, they are great experiential learning opportunities, again, based on the themes that we put together. And that has become a huge opportunity where students come together. And that's another thing that I would say for folks to keep in mind about our program is there is a strong community. And I say that only because I think it's difficult for people to imagine, well, how do you have a network and how do you have a sense of community in a virtual program? Great question. That is something that, to be honest with you, there are some days I have to remind myself that this program is online because there is just an incredible sense of community among the students. And that's exactly what we wanted to have happen.
Sure.
And you really see that come to life when you see them at the immersions.
Well, yeah, that's what cements it, probably. I can really hear that just from my own life, where I'm at this point. I think my comfort zone is very much virtual and communicating the online tools. And then
right.
So often I get out. I go to an AGAC conference, for example, or I meet my colleagues, and it's like, oh yeah, it's really nice to meet people in person. Or I visit schools.
Absolutely. And again, through the cutting edge platform that we have, you'll know this show, and I'm hoping everybody out there listening will remember this show, but we often say here of, imagine you're in your class, and when you're looking at your screen, of course, you're on a camera, but if you remember the show The Brady Bunch, when it's first coming on, and you see the boxes of the members of the family.
Yes.
It doesn't look exactly like that, of course, but that you're seeing each other. And these students, I mean, they're doing group projects just like, no different than students in our other programs here. And they get together through the platform. There are students also on a social level. This is the first time I heard this, it was really starting to crystallize that, yet the networking, the community, it's alive and well, and it's not being hampered whatsoever because of how we're delivering the program. But there's students who, they'll get together on a Friday afternoon for, shall we say, to talk and distress about their, or debrief about their work week, and have a glass, you know, do a virtual toast with a glass of whatever beverage of choice they're enjoying together.
So, sounds good.
You know, that may sound very simple, but that's really important because it's solidifying the fact that, I mean, there is a tight community here. And as you know, even with the full-time program, it's also going to be what every student makes of it.
Of course. That's I think, true about everything in life, frankly.
Right.
All right. Now, you addressed this a little bit before, but I have a specific question about it. The program attempts to balance synchronous, all people attend an online class at the same time, perhaps for a discussion of some kind, with asynchronous study. People study at their convenience and by themselves. And all classes are recorded, so people can either review or listen if they couldn't attend the real thing. Is there required attendance at the synchronous sessions? And if not, is there sometimes a problem having enough people to show up to have a worthwhile discussion or class?
Excellent questions once again. The answer to the first question, and imagine it being bold and underlined, yes, yes, and yes, attendance is required.
Okay.
So again, that is, like I said, these are, the expectations are the same as what we have with our other programs. Now, these students are working professionals. You might be wondering, can something, might there be an extreme circumstance that something is happening with a person's family or, you know, with a work assignment? Again, case by case, and we are certainly, I will tell you, this Kenan-Flagler is a school that is very accommodating, but, you know, accommodating within reason.
Still has standards.
Right, but otherwise, absolutely, there is an attendance policy. There's a baseline attendance policy, and then you know each professor may have some particular flexibility, but that is expected. And to the second part, the second question that you asked, yes, the courses are the classes are recorded, and again, that almost think about that as. That becomes a bank of material that the students can go back to. And it's not for students who missed the class, but it's also for the students who were there. They can go back. And so, again, it's, you know, that's the beauty of it is I can access this. I'm not only going to become better, I'm going to become great. And, again, that's because of the whole learning model that we have here.
That's great. Okay. You touched on this a little bit earlier. I'd like you to just address it one more time. Who should not pursue an online MBA, or specifically the online MBA at UNC?
I'll respond to that specifically about who should not attend MBA at UNC. There is not a hard definition, obviously, but what comes to mind once again is. I think number one, if it's somebody who really wants to make a very extreme career change.
Okay.
Number two is going to be more about a preference. Mm-hmm. There may be people out there that, hey, I'm looking at this program and it's very appealing, but they also may be in the early stages and they may decide that, you know what, I've just boiled it down and I'd like to be in a brick and mortar program. An example of that, there was a gentleman who recently had applied here, and he also had applied to the one of the executive MBA programs here.
Mm-hmm.
And he was admitted to both, and we wanted him, you know, ultimately we wanted him here at Kenan-Flagler, but we wanted him to make his choice. And I had a really terrific conversation with him. He had a pretty tough decision based on how he, you know, shared his process with me. But at the end of the day, he said, you know, I have worked virtually for a long time. And he said, I enjoy that. It's great. But I think personally, I would just enjoy having face-to-face.
Okay.
You know what? That's okay. And like
sure.
I said, I told him, I said, I'm just delighted you're going to be a Kenan-Flagler grad. So that's just one example. Is of course there are different programs, obviously because people have different preferences and different you know types of different programs and different reasons that they want to go to business school, and that's fine. But the big one that comes to mind would be someone who really wants to make a radical career change, of which, you know what, a full-time program would be better for you because an internship is going to be extremely critical given your particular career interest.
Right. I would also assume that people who just do better with structure, you know.
Yeah, at the same time, I will say you might be surprised. I mean, you've got to be structured in the program. The great news is this is a program for working professionals.
Yeah.
The challenge is this is in addition to your career life and everything else in your life. But there's a plus point about that, Linda, and what I mean by that is you've got to be disciplined, obviously, to be successful.
Right.
At a great MBA program. There are lots of ingredients, as I like to call them, for when you do become a student to do well and be successful, however that may mean to a particular person. Discipline and time management obviously are key, and I will tell you, this is purely my subjective opinion, but there has to be a higher level of discipline and time management with this group, again, because they are working.
Right.
And at the same time, that, I mean, think about it, that is, that's a great, great skill to have. And I believe it also spills, that discipline spills over